This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Okay, well, thank you, Colin, and thank you also for the invitation to speak to you this afternoon. First thing for me to say is, unlike Michael, I don't do jokes, but on the plus side, I'm not doing a PowerPoint either. And even better than that, everything I've got to say about how we are expected to manage our budgets within what's a new normal can be summed up in just two short phrases, in my view. However, before I get to that, I want to spend about 5 or 10 minutes leading up to it. So kind of sit back and relax. Now, today's event is all about the power of local government. And Colin has introduced me as the president of CITFA, and indeed that's how I'm speaking to you today. But of course, in my day job, I'm the Chamberlain of London, and the City of London Corporation is the oldest elected municipal government in the world. And my own post goes back to 1237. So we kind of know something about the power of local government, because we've been around for over 800 years. And our city planning officer, when we do our induction courses for our new members, starts off with an interesting phrase, and he says, "I'm the city planning officer, and I'm here to protect 4,000 years of corporation history, the 2,000 years that have already gone, and the next 2,000 years. And he really believes that, and that's kind of in our DNA. So we've been around a long time, we intend to be around a long time, and in this new normality, although life is tough, we know how to adjust to it. Now, at these times, most of the headlines we see about councils, about local authorities, are very negative ones. They're about cuts, about senior officers. They're about routinely bashing politicians. And it's easy to forget that local government still is, and has been for over many years, a real driving force for efficiency and a real successful and powerful part of our country's economy and democracy. And more often than not, it's been local government that's been the creator of the right conditions for economic growth. Earlier in the year, I spoke at CITFA's annual conference in Birmingham, a great city which in the 19th century grew to be great and prospered, not because it cut back on public spending, but because it invested. And it invested in the right kind of things in housing, in education, in public health, to make sure that Birmingham prospered. And the city created the kind of conditions then which we want today, conditions for which industry, innovation could thrive and jobs could be created. And the real beneficiaries are the citizens of Birmingham today and in the West Midlands, who generally enjoy great jobs and a healthy environment and great public services. So we now need to adjust to this new normality. Quite apart from the fact that I work for an organisation that's been around a long time, I feel as I've been around a long time myself. I've been in public service accountancy since 1972, and I've seen plenty of change in those years. But I don't think I've ever seen as many changes as we are going through today. These are really the most fundamental changes in the management of local government budgets, certainly in a generation, certainly longer than that. Budgets are simply getting smaller, and alternative providers are expected to play a growing role in the provision of public services, and everything needs to be delivered differently, more cost-effectively, more efficiently. As Michael was saying, we need to redesign the services we do. Let's not kid ourselves. We have not been that good in designing the services we've got. And the new normality depends that we do some redesign in that. And that new redesign goes with a very different redefinition of the relationship between central and local government. Power is being decentralised and it is being devolved. Actually, councils actually have more power nowadays to decide the best ways to go about doing their job, to implement efficiencies, but alongside that goes higher levels of accountability. Looking at the national position, of course, there is a pressing need to reduce public spending and public borrowing, and nobody can dispute that. But there's an overwhelming sense that change cannot wait. It cannot wait until we've managed to rebalance our finances. And this government certainly has that view, and their wide-ranging reform agenda, combined with the restraints on public spending, has really created something that can only be seen as almost a perfect storm. A perfect storm of legislative and financial pressures on local government and the services it provides. So, one thing we could conclude is that this perfect storm is actually the definition of the new normal, and it will not go away. The reality is that all UK public services, not just local government, is facing an economic new normal. Last week, there was news about cash-strapped NHS trusts and contentious cuts in defence. No corner in the public service is immune. We're all affected by other changes, such as pension changes, our own wrestling with a myriad of new initiatives in areas such as housing, benefits, education, business rate reform. The list goes on. But we are not victims, and we should not see ourselves as victims of the country's economic situation. The government's zeal for reform means that local government has got actually enormous potential in supporting the United Kingdom's economic recovery. The government's strategy for tackling the budget deficit has got to be based on two things. It's not just about reducing public spending, but it's also about regenerating economic growth. And what I would say is there's a crucial dependency between excellent public services and economic growth. Now, I mentioned I work for the City of London Corporation. One of the things we do is jealously guard the international competitiveness of UK financial services. It doesn't always make us the most popular people in the world. And I was only chatting earlier on to Sharon about coming away from St Paul's, where we've got something of a relatively large-scale public demonstration to deal with there. But the reality is that our economic and international competitiveness is crucial to our economic recovery. And since 2005, the World Economic Forum has produced an index of global competitiveness. Now, global competitiveness is more than just, if you like, simply based on company productivity, kind of hindered or helped by exchange rates. Rather, according to the forum, it's measured on what they call 12 pillars of effectiveness. Now, I'm not going to go into those 12 pillars of effectiveness. If you're interested in them, you can read about them, or you want to hear about them from an economist rather than an accountant. But I just want to summarise what they are to you, and I hope that you will instinctively agree that pretty much most, if not all, of the pillars depend to some degree on local government and public services. For example, economic competitiveness is about the quality of the infrastructure. It's about the legal and administrative framework in which businesses and people can operate, and the physical infrastructure, particularly transport and communications. Macroeconomic policy, of course, is massively important, particularly in this global world, but so is health and education, both at the primary sector and at other sectors as well. Market efficiencies are important, but so is the efficient movement of goods and labour and the quality of financial markets and financial services. And last but not least, international competitiveness depends on technological readiness, business sophistication, market size, and people's appetite for innovation. Those kind of things I was talking about existed in Birmingham, and things that the Birmingham local government created in Birmingham and the West Midlands. So what I would say this afternoon is that international competitiveness depends absolutely on high-quality public services being in place nationally and at local levels. So there is a great challenge and opportunity for local government, not to get fixated by public spending reductions. They are our new reality. But to focus our attention on ensuring that we get the right level and the right type of public spending and investment to maintain our competitiveness, both at our regional and local levels, but also nationally. However, in pursuing that, we must live up to our responsibility for supporting local citizens. And we need to do that in a way that that promotes and supports economic generation, but also, I think, in a way which meets citizens' needs. And again, this comes back to a point that's been made in the short time I've been here today. It's about redesigning public services in a way that meets customers' needs rather than the way in which we would like to provide them. So this new normality, this new normal, is both a time of opportunity and challenge. But it comes with risk, and it's riddled with risk. We mustn't lose sight of citizens' needs, and we mustn't lose sight of the need to maintain continuity for vulnerable people, particularly in this backdrop of such high levels of experimentation and change. One of the ways in which we will do that, of course, one of the ways we will manage those risks and mitigate them, is by keeping to a key principle of doing what is right as opposed to what is easy, to ensure that we deliver services as securely and efficiently as possible to meet local needs. Now, I'm kind of conscious of time, and I know Colin has only allowed me a limited amount of time, but one thing I want to mention is that a lot of this was foreseen, and in fact, my own institute, SITFA, along with SOLIS, the Society of Local Authority of Chief Executives, nearly 2 years ago, produced a report called After the Downturn. Now, I'm not going to reprise what's in that report. It's worth reading it. But really, 2 years ago, that report forecast most, if not everything, that we're going through today. And it forecasts the need for us to get to adjust to massive reduced levels of public spending, to redesign and restructure our services, not just to reduce cost, but to make them more understandable by local citizens, who, quite frankly, are still often confused by the complexity of public services that are being provided. So in the time available, I'm going to skim through that and hopefully leave that for you to pick up later on. And I'm going to move to the conclusion. And I said at the outset, I felt there were two key things that we needed to do to adjust to this new normality and to adjust certainly to the financial position. And I'd summarise them really as follows. First of all, we need to be much more urgent and agile. That's never been a public service strength. If ever there was a time now to have pace of change, this is it. And the second thing is not to pretend that what we need to do is easy. Michael referred to shared services. We know joining up isn't easy. People who say to me, why can't we do it? I say back to them, look, most of us in this room have got our own house. Hands up those people who've got their own garden. Hands up those of you who spoke to your next door neighbour and said, hey, if we took down the fence, we'd have a bigger garden we could share. Hands up. Yeah, none of you. Well, that's not a bad sign. But you get my point. Shared services is not that easy to deliver, and it's actually hardest of all for near neighbours. You know, I used to work in Somerset and lived in Taunton, our neighbouring council. People still remembered Bridgewater Council from the days of the Civil War. And they spoke about the Civil War as though it happened last week and last year, and Judge Jeffreys and all that kind of stuff. The last people they wanted to share services with was their next-door neighbour. And when I was running a kind of quite big shared services initiative through the county council, I got a lot of interest, but not from Somerset districts, from districts in Wiltshire and Cornwall and Gloucestershire, who said, hey, we want to do business with you. We can't do business with our local council because that's just too politically impossible. But actually, we can do business with you because you're 50 miles away, 100 miles away. So there's a way through on shared services, and it's not by, I think, looking at your next-door neighbour. It's a way of looking for organisations that kind of share your values and your abilities and are perhaps not too much of a threat. But this is my second key point. I said my first one was about having pace and change. The second thing is to do what's right rather than what's easy. If as we navigate our way through these times, our decisions are generally ones which we're making quickly and they're the difficult ones, we're probably doing it right. If they're decisions we're doing at a slow pace of change and they are the easy ones, they're probably the wrong ones. And to me, I would conclude by saying that is a reality of managing expectations, certainly for the next decade. Thank you.